Welcome to the official Cryptids, Anomalies, and the Paranormal Society's podcast. I'm your host, Barnaby, and you're listening to Whispers from the Dark. Hello and welcome to the second taping of this week's episode of Whispers from the Dark. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, the second taping of this week's episode. Why? Because I didn't record any of my audio. But let me tell you, you are going to have a fantastic show tonight because we already know what we're going to talk about and we have everything nailed down. Tonight's episode is going to be part two of Anthropomorphic Humanoids. And with me is my guest, Fathom. How you doing?
Hey,
This is going on about, almost 2 hours now at this point. The first episode went through and we had a lot of editing we had to do on it. Now, at least this episode is going to be a lot cleaner because I'm actually recording my audio this time. And we have everything situated. So, alrighty. Let's get right into this week's housekeeping.
I'm going to share the screen again.
I will share the screen again. Here we go.
All right, I'll look in the right place this time.
All right. There we go. So, you guys have the amazing opportunity to not only see myself, but the rare chance to see Cosmic Fathom, my guest today, at a public event that we're going to be going to. That's right, me and Cosmic Fathom are going to be appearing at the Metaphysical and Wellness Expo Fair. It says fair. It's Wellness Expo. Metaphysical and Wellness Fair at the Best Western Plus in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, February 19th of this year from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. It is $5 admission at the door, and you can get all the information at metaparapro.com. That's metaparapro.com. And this is the first time that these guys are mixing paranormal and cryptids into their conventions. So we are going to be both at this one, and I will be speaking. And we will also be at one of their metaphysical fairs in Janesville, Wisconsin, in a couple months. I think that one is in March, I think. But this one is February 19th, and we got some great stuff, or they got some great stuff going on here. At 10:30 in the morning is Mary Neustrom from Zenith High, and she will be speaking on the magic of shamanism. And at 11:30 a.m., John Rothengass from Maple House Arts will be speaking The Ramblings of an Average Joe. Haha, because he's Joe. at 12:30, Sue, help me out here, Sue Hung from the Rainbow Rock Reiki, not Reiki, R-E-I-K-I. Reiki. Rainbow Rock
Reiki.
Reiki. Like reggae, Reiki. But not. There's no G's. At 12:30, she will be speaking about the Raise Your Vibrations and How. Which brings us to special guest, Deet Renee, who is a psychic medium, and she will be giving a gallery reading at 1:30. There is an additional $25 charge to be part of this gallery reading. So it is only $5 to get into the wellness fair, but it is $25 to attend the psychic reading. And at 2:30, yours truly, Barnaby from Wisconsin Caps, Cryptids, Anomalies, and the Paranormal Society, will be speaking on what are cryptids? I can't even read what it says here. What are cryptids? And finally, at 3:30 p.m., Audrey Van Wey, who is a psychic intuitive and medium, will be speaking on ghost hunting on a shoestring budget. So there you go. What are you most excited about this, Fathom?
I want to look at everybody's crystals.
Yeah. So this is
Where's their
they're gonna have Reiki. They're going to have let me go back to the actual page here. What do we got here? All right, so join us for a day of healing. We are hosting a number of vendors, including tarot and oracle card readers, medium, psychic, Reiki, energy. See, there it's spelled Reiki too. I thought it was RA, Reiki.
You say it like RA.
It's not? That's the way it's supposed to be? That's how much I know. All
You know what? We'll Google it later.
we'll Google it later. Reiki energy, healers and shamans, vendors selling crystals. There you go. Stones. Ooh, stones. Candles, jewelry, incense, and other merchandise will all be present. $5 charge at the door, and speakers are free to attend. Speakers are free to attend. So you get into the speakers with your $5 attendance fee. And then there's a $25 charge for the gallery with Diet. Ooh, there you go. Diet. Diet Renee. It's spelt different with different punctuation, I guess we'll call it here.
I mean, I was really hoping for some dark crystal stuff going on with her name, but that's okay. It's okay.
Deet.
It's still
That's
really
spelt
cool.
different though. Deet, for the Dark Crystal fans out there, Deet is not spelt like that though. Deet is DEAT.
I don't care.
Okay. Look in the discussion section for posts about the event. And we shared this on our page. I will share it again right now. So that you guys can see that. Coming up this month. Share. Top of our page right there. Go check it out. Well, top of our page at this moment. And yeah, so me and Cosmic Fathom will be at this event. She will be watching the booth while I give my speech. Otherwise, I will be there all day. She will be there all day. And either one of us will be happy to answer any of your questions about paranormal or shamanism or cryptids or anything that we can talk about because, you know, God knows both of us love to talk, right?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Right on. So another cool thing that we got going on at CAPS is the CAPS Academy. And so CAPS Academy is going to actually be starting in March because we had some scheduling issues with stuff, and so we decided to push it back a month. But CAPS Academy will be starting in March. And we are going to be taking people that are interested with some background experience and stuff in the paranormal or cryptids or any kind of stuff that we're interested in. And we're going to be taking you out and giving you some great information on our equipment and all that stuff and any of the knowledge that we've acquired and stuff that we've done and training basically the next generation of our team. And those who join the CAPS Academy and graduate CAPS Academy will become full-fledged members of Cryptids, Anomalies, and the Paranormal Society. You can get all the information and more on our website at wisconsincaps.com. You can sign up and become a member there and all that fun stuff. And then we also have our Patreon page. That's an interesting sound in the background.
Yep, sorry. I was trying to hit mute.
Our Patreon page is up and running. We have Cryptids, Anomalies, and the Paranormal Society is at patreon.com backslash Wisconsin Caps, spelled out all the way, Wisconsin, not WI. And for just $5 a month, if you like what we do on our podcast and you like what we do on our, what is this? Our podcast, our YouTube and stuff. If you like all that stuff and you want to see more, we are going to have a lot of stuff on there. We already have cool behind the scenes stuff on there and other great stuff. And as soon as we get more Patreons signed up for this, we have zero right now. You can be our first Patreon. We have all kinds of stuff on there for $5 a month. You can see more, and that money goes just to help us keep doing what you guys enjoy us doing. And we also have a $25 level for Patreon, and we have some really cool stuff on there. Let me see if I can pull it up, because... There we go. Benefits. On our Patreon, you get exclusive content, early access, and for the $25 level, you actually get more behind the scenes. You get live event notifications. That's right. We are going to start doing some live events, like our paranormal tours and stuff, that you guys will be invited to. And because you're donating at the $25 a month level, you guys get to come for free. That's right. Any events that we have, special events that we host and do, live events online and in person, you guys get free access to for being a $25 a month level Patreon. So that's something you guys can look forward to. And again, once we start getting those Patreons rolling in, they'll be there will be a lot of interesting stuff. How's it going over there?
I'm good.
All right.
I'm good, man.
All right. I was just making sure that your stuff was all taken care of. So, all right. Excuse me. As I said, now that our housekeeping stuff is all taken care of, we are going to be talking again about this is the third time now, about anthropomorphic humans, or humanoids. Anthropomorphic humans. Basically humans. After we recorded our first episode on anthropomorphic humans, humanoids, God, this episode is doing just as good as the first one. as things tend to do in our realm of study and everything, there's weird synchronicities that happen. And after we had recorded the first episode, coming home from our lovely trip out in the snow, I was listening to another interesting podcast and was reminded of something else that I had done research on a while ago that shed a lot of light on our discussion of these anthropomorphic humanoids. So, what I found was a guy named John Ramirez, and John came out, the podcast that I was listening to came out, it was an interview on Podcast UFO, right? And on Podcast UFO, John is interviewed. And he talks about going to this meeting at a hotel. Now, he is a former CIA officer, representative, whatever he was. He worked in the CIA. He is now retired, and he has become what you had called a whistleblower. And as far as coming out with this information, he is relatively new. I looked up a lot of other stuff on him. And back before, like, December, you can't find anything about him. He just kind of surfaces then. And from then on, he starts getting more and more interviews and stuff like that. So he first came out. But he was in the CIA, and he was really interested in UFOs and that stuff. And his coworkers knew about this, and they told him that he needed to go check out this meeting. And this meeting was like open, like no credentials needed or anything. And he walked into this meeting, and it was a bunch of scientific community, like university scientists and stuff like that, that were conducting this meeting. And I will let him take it away. We're gonna take a listen to this, okay?
And to hear what I heard, I said, okay, there's something to this story. And they related to the fact that they went back to after World War II for this hybrid story. And they didn't present any evidence. So when they say, I have no evidence, I agree with you. I don't have any evidence. All I have is these two top officials saying that the CIA has been interested in the hybridization of humans and that discovered alien DNA in the human genome. That's what they told me. So if I get permission to use their names, and they're still alive, if I get permission to use their names, then that offers another avenue for researchers to actually knock on their doors and ring their phones to say, hey, you know, where's the evidence? How did you know this yourself that they told me and others in that room about alien DNA? And so that's where I'm at right now. And in conjunction with that, I wanted to get my medical records from CIA. And as a separate process, it's not a FOIA process for employees or former employees of the CIA. We go through a different internal channel where we can self-identify as CIA officers because I have a secret number. like I said, it's not 007, but there is a number that they can look up and then actually say, yeah, this guy is CIA. And so I requested my medical records and I'm still waiting on them. They acknowledged receiving my request and I'm just still waiting on them to deliver to me my medical records. I want to see what my medical records might say about any kind of high strangeness that CIA found.
Now, when you say that the hybrid situation, you know, that's what a lot of people are getting stuck on when they're watching you. But when you're saying that, I just wanted to clear something up because it was a little confusing to me. And that is, are you saying that there's hybrids, the hybrids are from 1946 or 47 forward? Or are you saying that's when you discovered something?
That's when the government discovered that the human genome contained alien DNA.
And how, I'm not a scientist in any type of way, but how would they know alien from, I mean.
So I give credence to the fact that Roswell actually happened. And I believe personally that bodies were recovered. And if these bodies were examined and then their DNA was examined and they know what that alien genome looked like, and they look at humans and they can identify the same sequences in human genome, I think that's what led them to believe that there's an hybridization of humans.
Okay, so we're back here. And so he basically says that the government, or maybe not the government, obviously, but these universities were doing genetics research on the human genome and found out that humans have alien DNA in them.
Which is crazy and awesome to think about, because scientists know that, you know, in the medical field, you know, obviously they're all scientists and whatever, or doctors and whatnot. The medical field knows that there is junk DNA, quote unquote, in our, I was going to say genome, but that's not right. Anyway, we have junk DNA, and they call them junk DNA because they're like, well, it's there, but we don't know what it does. So that's kind of interesting. I haven't heard anything about them figuring out what junk genes are, so.
Yeah, that's definitely. So why hasn't the government come out and said anything about this? Why is this like a hidden topic? You know, if they've known this since, you know, like right after the World War, why hasn't this become more common knowledge?
I mean, I feel like, you know, just the easiest description or explanation is just the Occam's razor of, for gatekeeping purposes, you know, for control mayhaps. I mean, I hear a lot of, we don't want to tell the public because they'll freak out or, you know, whatever, which is just kind of like rude. the mistrust. I think people could handle a lot these days, but yeah, so maybe. Or could be a protection of like secret stuff in the underground and the elitist quote unquote world.
Interesting. So the reason why this is interesting. Now, this alone right here, the John Ramirez interview, and I'm going to leave a link to that interview. The full interview is about 2 hours long that has this clip in it. I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes. So if you're interested in hearing that whole interview, it's from UFO Podcast or Podcast UFO. Sorry, I don't want to get that mixed up. Podcast UFO. And it's on YouTube, their channel and everything. So you can go check that out. And again, I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes. And I actually have shared this whole interview on our Facebook page a while ago when I first listened to it because I thought it was super interesting. But here is why I bring this up. Because obviously, humans and alien DNA is one thing, but that does not explain why we're talking about that on the Anthropomorphic Humanoids Part 2 episode, right? So we're going to get into that. But first, I need to go back and explain something else. Now, we're going to go way off topic here, and we're going to talk about a planet, basically. Now, this planet is a hypothesized planet. Which means it's thought to exist, but not necessarily proven in any realm or anything, right? So back in the original, if you look back, you have all these ancient texts. And in those ancient texts, there's one that is, according to our, you know, carbon dating and our scientific research and everything, is older than all the rest. And do you know what ancient texts those are?
The ancient Sumerian texts.
You were on the ball this time.
Boom.
Boom. Helps to record the podcast twice.
That is correct.
What's that?
I guess we should always just do rehearsal, yeah?
Podcasts are now 3 hours long. The first hour and a half we don't record, and then we do it for real. Yes, so the oldest recorded text is supposedly the Sumerian text. And the Sumerian text predates all other texts. The biblical texts, you know, the Greeks, the Romans, all that stuff. You know, this goes back to the very first stuff. And it talks about the Epic of Gilgamesh, right? But there is another story that supposedly comes out of the Sumerian texts. And that story references Planet X, or Nibiru. And I'm going to read you this here. This hypothetical Neptune-sized planet orbits our sun in a highly elongated orbit far beyond Pluto. The object, which researchers have nicknamed Planet 9, could have a mass of about 10 times that of Earth and orbit 20 times farther from the sun on average than Neptune. It may take between 10 and 20,000 years to make a full orbit around the sun. Now, I am reading this directly from a website, right? And you're probably thinking, you know, out there in, you know, listener land, that this is coming from some website, right? Like, but let me tell you what exact website that I'm getting this information off of. This is NASA.gov. That's right. This is on the official NASA website. Okay, so there's an article on here called Hypothetical Planet X, and it talks about the fact that there could be a possible planet that has not been discovered, that is only in our solar system for a short time, and it just circles way, way out there. Now, if this is true, there is a Sumerian story that goes along with this. And we now have We now have the audio clip of that. And I want to kind of turn it over to them. And this is another link we'll put in the show notes and stuff so you can go listen to the whole thing. But this talks about Planet X and the Anunnaki. And yeah, it's really interesting. So we're gonna go over there and take a listen to this and let me know what you think.
Have you ever wondered why schools teach so little, if anything, about the world's first advanced civilization? Especially when it introduced so many things we still use today. Why the mystery around Sumeria, which was in Mesopotamia, and what's now modern-day Iraq? After all, here are just some of what they gave us. The modern calendar, based on lunar cycles. The 60-20 counting system used for geometry and measuring time. The wheel, the plow. Irrigation systems like levees and canals. Sailboats. They even spoke the first known language. And, most importantly, they left evidence of the first recorded writing. That's a lot of intelligent contributions to humanity. So why aren't we taught more about this clearly advanced and influential civilization? Well, connect the dots and you'll discover why the omission could be deliberate. Sumerians were accurate in creating many advanced systems, yet we dismiss their history of man as mere mythology. And why is that? Well, if we gave the same credibility to their written history as we've given their inventions, we'd be teaching a completely different version of our origins. And we'd be thinking a lot more about what our future may hold. So let archaeologists continue to debate the history and evolution of man. If you go to the source, here's what the first civilization ever to record history revealed about our past. In 1849, a British archaeologist discovered 14 tablets in Sumeria. To date, these are the oldest known writings, and they date back to the 24th century BC. While the stories on them share much of what other ancient writings say, they put a whole new spin on the other ancient sacred texts. You see, while they do refer to a father of all beginnings, or some kind of ultimate supreme being, the tablets say that the creators in Genesis, the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve, these were polytheistic gods of ours, otherworldly beings, or just plain out, they were aliens. The entire first two tablets explain who they were and where they were from. Tablet 3 tells of the 6 days of creation, or settlement, on Earth. Later, they explain how the human race was genetically manipulated by these beings and did not evolve randomly. Even the technology Sumerians gave us came from these beings. Are you interested now in knowing more about what the Sumerians had to say about our history? Here are selected legends from the 14 tablets and their parallels with other ancient sources. According to the Sumerian tablets, 445,000 years ago, creator gods, as they call it, came to Earth. The only inhabitants of Earth were wild and undomesticated animals, and early ancestors of man. These beings were called the Anunnaki, which means those who from heaven to Earth came. The Anunnaki inhabited a distant orbiting planet called Nibiru, which only entered our solar system every 3,600 years. They describe Nibiru as many times the diameter of Earth and abundant with iron oxide, making its rivers and lakes appear red. Now, a side note about Nibiru. According to the tablets, Nibiru's atmosphere began to deteriorate and become a hostile place for life, and in order to restore it, the Anunnaki needed one important element for their atmosphere, gold. Now here are a few interesting facts. There is proof that gold nanoparticles can be used to repair our damaged ozone. It shields radiation, which explains why NASA uses gold foils in their space stations. While NASA is currently aware of 8 official planets in our solar system, there has been much speculation about the wobbly orbit of 2 planets, which points to the likely gravitational pull of a very large mass, which has yet to be discovered. Now, detection of this mass traces back decades, but in October of 2017, NASA published an article called "The Super Earth That Came Home for Dinner," stating, "There are now 5 different lines of observational evidence pointing to the existence of Planet 9. If you were to remove this explanation and imagine Planet 9 does not exist, then you generate more problems than you solve. Clearly, there is potential of another planet yet to be discovered in our solar system." Now, when the Anunnaki arrived, they were capable of living lives that spanned hundreds of thousands of years. They created a mining settlement they called Eriduk, Earth Station 1, in the Persian Gulf, under a leader named Enki. The tablets convey, "After a kingship descended from heaven, it was an Eriduk." These visitors were not alone. They brought another extraterrestrial race with them. They were called the Ajiji, and they worked as their slaves. The Ajiji were considered inferior. They served the Anunnaki by mining gold. As civilizations grew, the Ajiji endured crushing labor. And these stories are consistent with Babylonian tablets from the 18th century BC. When the gods, manlike, bore the labor, carried the load, the gods' load was great, the toil grievous, the trouble excessive. The great Anunnaki made the Ajiji undertake the toil. After many centuries, the Ajiji rebelled, mistakenly believing they could overcome these oppressive masters. Their defeat almost completely annihilated their race, leaving the Anunnaki without a workforce. Unable to replace the Ajiji, Nibiru's ruler, Anu, ordered his son Enki to genetically engineer a new slave race, one that was intelligent enough to perform complex work but still be subservient to the Anunnaki. His experiments are recounted in detail in Atrahasis. Many unique creatures were created. Enki finally successfully met his goal, and the result? A genetic hybrid between Earth's caveman, Homo erectus, and the Anunnaki themselves. This hybrid we call Homo sapiens. The tablets called first men the Adamu. In Hebrew, Adam means man. The Anunnaki put the Homo sapiens to work in the mines and elsewhere in Mesopotamia. The Semitic word avod, or worship, literally means work for. Hence, early man had no choice but to worship their gods. According to the pictographs and texts, these Anunnaki, who we know lived many centuries, were giants compared to the Homo sapiens. Now, because their main purpose in life was to serve the Anunnaki, Homo sapiens were, in return, educated with social skills and academic affairs and technology. All this is abundantly clear in the tablets. The new human slaves were sterile, but as the demand for workforce increased, they were re-engineered so that they could reproduce. This later led to an overpopulation. So later, many humans were banished from the safety of their cities, giving rise to the story of the Garden of Eden and the story of banishment from paradise for procreating. As humans evolved to become more intelligent, some Anunnaki leaders bred with these humans. The children which resulted from these forbidden unions between races were called the Nephilim, or giants of old. Tablets say that these practices enraged Enlil, the Anu leader of that time, who was also the brother of Enki. Enlil wanted to ensure no human would ever rise to power and potentially rule Nibiru. Naturally, the interbreeding increased that risk, but it was beyond his control. Human populations increased over the following millennia, only to be met with a population control plan that nature had in store. During one of its 3,600-year cycles, Nibiru's orbit created havoc on the sun and on Earth. Nibiru is also called the Destroyer in the Colbran, which is an ancient gospel found in Scotland that was omitted from biblical text, much like the Dead Sea Scrolls were. It reads, "Men forgot the days of the Destroyer. Only the wise know where it went, and that it shall return at the appointed time. The Destroyer, its color, bright and fierce and ever-changing, was an unstable appearance, a fierce body of flames." Though stating Nibiru usually passes without causing harm, the tablets describe one cataclysmic event which occurred when Nibiru neared Earth. It says, first, black spots appeared on the sun's surface. The Earth's magnetic field became weaker, the temperature rose, and ice caps began melting. This event we call the deluge, or the Great Flood. It also reads, for days before the day of the deluge, the earth was rumbling, groaning, as if with pain. For nights before the calamity struck, in the heavens, Nibiru, as a glowing star, was seen. Well, according to the tablets, Enlil saw the oncoming disaster as an opportunity to rid the planet of humans that he deemed unworthy. He returned to Nibiru, but many Anunnaki chose to stay, instead witnessing the flooding and the destruction on the planet from their celestial boats which circled the Earth. It reads, "Then there was darkness in daytime, and at night, the moon, as though by a monster, was swallowed. The Earth began to shake by a force before unknown. It was agitated. In the glow of dawn, a black cloud arose from the horizon. The morning light turned to darkness. Then the sound of a rolling thunder boomed, and lightning lit the skies. On that day, on that unforgettable day, the deluge with a roar began." At that point, the South Pole's huge ice sheets collided and fell into the ocean. This would have created tsunamis everywhere, traveling north to the gold mines in Southeast Africa. The tidal wave continued north until it reached and submerged the City of Eden, one of the first Anunnaki settlements on Earth, now located somewhere at the bottom of today's Persian Gulf. Witnessing the cataclysm, Enki, who felt sympathy for his creations, instructed his chosen ones to build boats. Among these few humans was Zayusudra, we know as Noah, and his family. A great storm with heavy rains started. The tidal wave kept sweeping the earth for 7 days until it finally came to a halt. But the heavy rains continued for 40 more days and nights. The story of the deluge is recorded in almost every civilization on our planet. Core ice samples taken from Greenland and Antarctica illustrate that at the height of the last ice age, the sea levels were 425 feet lower than they are today. And, more importantly, there is a clear indication of a rapid sea rise. After the deluge, reconstruction of a new spaceport began. The text describes how the Anunnaki made their buildings according to the position of the stars. It reads, "Let the heart of the plain, the heavens, reflect." Once Enki to this agreed, and Enlil from the skies of distances took measures. Indeed, the pyramids, now questioned to be much older than originally determined, and many other ancient monuments are, in fact, aligned to the stars. When the Anunnaki finally left Earth, their influence had reached every corner of the world, from Mesopotamia to India to South America. Before they left, they gifted humanity the Sumerian civilization, which was inexplicably advanced for its time, having made a sort of a sudden appearance as a mature and highly organized culture that came out of nowhere. The Anunnaki taught the Sumerians their way of life and established monarchs. Now here's where it gets interesting. The kings would act as their emissaries on Earth and rule the people according to ancient principles. Unbeknownst to man, royal bloodlines were genetically manipulated by the Anunnaki. This would in turn explain the strong aversion by nobility to interclass breeding. Some people speculate that the Anunnaki have deceptively managed to control the Earth through this selective breeding of nobility for centuries, millennia. Others speculate that, as the tablets indicate, Nibiru may once again come close to our planet, and then the Anunnaki will return and restore rule over the slave race they created. This would explain the secrecy around the Sumerian recorded history. Either way, 3,600 years approaches a new cycle. So now that you know what ancients reveal about our origins, perhaps you'd like to decide.
All right, so this is a very interesting story, right? Now we're not saying that this is true, but if it is, or if this writing is actually from the ancient Sumerian text, and you know they're documenting all this stuff, this one story could single-handedly like explain almost everything that we're dealing with, you know. Now I want to pull back before we dissect any more of this, and get into the meat and potatoes of why we're talking about this on the Anthropomorphic Humanoid episode part 2, okay? And if you remember hearing in this, it says that after the slave race came up against the masters and tried to overthrow them, they were all killed. And then they tried to genetically engineer a new slave race. Now, how they did that, according to these texts in the story, is they took other animals that were already on Earth, including, ancient humanoids, you know, the cavemen and stuff, Australopithecus and, those guys, and created Homo erectus, or man. And that's how we have the alien and human hybrid theory, which is what our friend over here, John Ramirez, was talking about in his thing. But when we were talking about the anthropomorphic humanoids, this could be exactly where your Dogman, your Bigfoot, your cat-headed animals, your alligator-headed animals, all of these creatures come from.
It does make a lot of sense if you wanted to look at it like that. Humor it, like I do.
So what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, it's one of those things that I hear it, and I'm not like, I don't know. I'm very much like, yeah, I could accept this. This makes sense. It would explain a lot of things as far as just like why we have these and why they're everywhere. And yeah.
I mean, you're basically taking animal as we know them and Anunnaki DNA. So you have the alien and this animal, which is creating what would be the human animal hybrid. So these things have to have the intelligence of the Anunnaki, you know, or could potentially have the intelligence of the Anunnaki because they're that type of animal, that type of intelligence. You know, they did the same thing hypothetically to us, and that's why we are the way we are. And it seems, here's another interesting thought, though. In this story, supposedly, again, hypothetically, humans were given the ability to reproduce.
Mm-hmm.
It does not say that these other creatures were.
Oh. Yeah. I totally missed that.
It also says that the Anunnaki could live for a really long time, though. Which also, back in the day, if you read the Bible and stuff, it talks about how these characters in the Bible lived for hundreds of years as well. You know, so you're talking about mixing these Anunnaki DNA and Australopithecine, you know, the pre-human, you know, the cavemen, we'll call them just for the sake, their DNA with Anunnaki, which is giving these hybrids this long life. It also talks about the Nephilim being these, you know, giant creatures and stuff in this, and their DNA coming from that. So these, you know, and that would be another reason why, like, giants, you don't see very many of them. You don't see, like, children, because these things are so old and ancient and stuff that they just don't reproduce. There is only a limited number of them, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we've heard stories of baby Bigfoot. We have heard stories. So let me propose this to you. If a caveman evolved, would it become, would it become Bigfoot? But cavemen and historic humans, whatever, were thought to be able to use tools.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think that if the human race, Homo sapiens, evolved based on the Anunnaki and all that stuff, we're far more advanced. Wouldn't you think that these cavemen would still be advancing and not going backwards to be more Bigfoot-esque?
I mean, that definitely makes sense, you know, and scientists have even, I can't name any names or anything because, you know, I watch a lot of documentaries, but like, science has said more than once, like, it, compared to anything else that has happened in, like, the evolution of the planet and its species, that humans were just sort of like, we're fast, you know, I mean, it took a long time, but fast, and so I think that ties in, maybe, or I mean, this topic ties into that, like, so we know from another side of it that isn't part of the paranormal whatnot, that yeah, it's sort of weird that humans just got as smart as they did. As far as that, though, I mean, look at all the different chains of evolution for humans, and I think that there's room to think that maybe, I mean, if we talk about, you know, Bigfoot specifically, how they are intelligent. They have their own language. They do their own thing. Just because they live in the forest and do their own thing doesn't mean they're not smart, you know?
Right.
People go live in the forest and they're smart. So maybe it's not like a de-evolution, but some kind of specialized thing that was for another reason.
Possibly. Let's look at it like this. If these creatures are out there and humans knew about them, do you think that they'd feel threatened? And, like, knowing that fire and tools were traceable and they could be found, do you think that they maybe just stopped using them as a survival instinct?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's totally possible. You know, that's evolution, that's adaptation, and that would be a pretty good adaptation to just not bother with that.
Okay. So, now going back to the other ones, though, like, we had talked about the Dog Man and those guys, But there are reports. Okay, this is what I'm getting at is we talked about how humans were given the ability to reproduce supposedly in this. So if Dogman can't reproduce unless it was given the ability, maybe there are reports of infant dogmen, you know, pups, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So would that indicate that maybe that's an evolutionary trait? You know, because now we're looking at the whole Jurassic Park situation of, you know, evolution of, you know, creatures of a same sex in a single sex environment can spontaneously change sex from male to female, or, you know, grow the ability to reproduce. So is it possible that these creatures are adapting to be able to reproduce? Or are we taking this too literal, that the fact that the Sumerians ever didn't have the ability to reproduce, you know? Because we'll look at, like, science now. Like, are clones sterile?
Good question. I actually don't know the answer to that.
I don't either. I know certain species, like, let's look at, like, the Z-donk, and which is a horse and or a zebra and a donkey, or a zorse, which is a zebra and a horse.
Or, you know, just a mule.
Right, yeah. I'm pretty sure those guys are sterile. Well, I know the mule is sterile. I'm not familiar with if the crossbreeding of the other ones, or a liger. I don't believe ligers have the ability to... A liger is obviously a lion and a tiger. And these do exist. These happen in the wild. Well, let's talk about this. I think... was this you and me that were talking? No, it was me and another guy at work. We're talking about polar bears and grizzly bears have started mating.
Yep, grizzlies and growlers.
And they have produced an offspring. And there was a whole story on NPR recently about this. And they were talking about how there's more and more of these things out there. And they were trying to figure out, they're sterile, so how are they reproducing? And what's actually happening is, I believe it's a female grizzly bear is mating with multiple male polar bears. And so they're creating these whole genetic line of these hybrids, but they're all sterile. So they keep happening because the one, the mother, I believe, the grizzly bear, is mating with this whole population of the males. And then I think that one of the females of the hybrid actually mated with one of the male polar bears as well, is what they had said.
Mm-hmm.
Don't quote me on that, but so that was pretty interesting too. So it seems like some of these hybrids possibly are sterile and some of them aren't. So it is within the realm of nature to produce these hybrids, and some very unique hybrids all on its own. Now, we're not going to get into that. Yeah, so you have the possibility of these things just existing. And this would account for, you know, when you look back at the Egyptian gods, where you have Horus and the monkey headed and the falcon headed, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And the lion, the cat headed, all that stuff. It's possible, based on this story, that these things are the offspring of the Anunnaki and what was attempted to be their slave race.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and if we look at, you know, the fact again that, you know, they were said to live so long, it's like, I mean, and if they were intelligent, which if you want to, like, take this back into, like, Egyptian culture, like, they were. So, and you got all this time on your hands. I mean, you could probably figure out how to, you know, like, either mess around with your own DNA with other creatures, or, you know, like, just not be sterile anymore. Which, by the way, clones are, they are not sterile, so.
Cool. But yeah, but definitely clones are not the same as these hybrids.
Well, yeah.
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 But it was just an interesting side note to think about that, yeah. So.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since we're on the topic of Nibiru and Planet X and stuff, I think this could be like its whole own episode, you know?
It really could.
So maybe we'll throw the Nibiru thing off to its own thing. But it's really interesting that, you know, like, the fact that this whole thing comes back to the same, you know, we're talking about this Planet X, and supposedly the Anunnaki should return, right? And if that's possible, now we're talking about all these things coming forward. You know, I keep posting these disclosure things about aliens and UFOs and stuff like that are coming in this current year, in 2022 here, and all this stuff that's coming out from the government and whistleblowers, and why is the alien topic so big now where it never was before? And do you think that it's possible that these aliens are coming back and the governments do know this and they're trying to prepare? Oh, this is the other thing. In the John Ramirez interview, is he talks about the fact that there is I'm gonna play this clip. Okay, we're gonna listen to one more clip from John Ramirez, and we're gonna discuss that. So hang tight, we'll be right back with that clip. All right. So basically, what that other interview says. It may not have been John Ramirez. It might have been Lou Elizondo. The other interview actually talks about the fact that there is a government agency that is supplying storylines to the motion picture industry. And what that means is that they're basically throwing out storylines about aliens, about a lot of situations that could possibly happen or have happened, that they want to see how the general public reacts to it, so that they can kind of, in a way, like, desensitize you to those information, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to find that clip, and I apologize that I could not find it, but now I believe that it was Lou Elizondo that may have said that and brought that up. It was definitely either Lou Elizondo or John Ramirez, but I did listen to a lot of interviews back and forth in the time that I was working on this, so I don't have that clip, but it did come from one of those two gentlemen. So, and Lou Elizondo is also former government. He stepped down to kind of act as a whistleblower, so... Yeah. Another thing that I wanted to bring up, or you have actually brought up, is that the end of that story that we listened to about Planet X, it talks about the DNA of the Chosen Ones. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. You asked if I remember. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
yeah. Well, you brought it up, so I was throwing it back to you too.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah. So, the DNA of the Chosen Ones, or the Royals, or the Ambassadors, or between the planets and whatnot, that totally ties in with, or could tie in with, you know, the subculture that we all know that is the elitists, or, you know, the Illuminati and all of that stuff. We know it's there. We don't know much about it, obviously. And I think that could be mayhaps what they are, because we already view these people as, you know, being in control of the world. You know, we say they and them and whatever. And say, who is they and them? We don't know, but mayhaps that's who they are, or what they are, and why they are so niche and close-circled, and, you know, everything is, all the information for them is gate-kept.
Yeah. And that reminds me of, like, we're talking about conspiracies and, like, the rulers of the world. You have to not leave out the Freemasons. I mean, when you're right. talking about the secret societies and the people that rule the world, a lot of your presidents, a lot of your famous actors, a lot of your famous, you know, like, people in power and with authority and all that, your, what'd you call them, the ambassadors, the royals, come from, they are members of the Freemasons, whether it's just a fraternal brotherhood or something more. But then let's go back and look at the actual origins of the Freemasons. So the Freemasons became the Freemasons when they went into hiding. The Freemasons went into hiding because they used to be the Knights Templar, or the Templar Knights. The Templar Knights were the basic army of the church. And this army was supposed to be guarding either the Ark of the Covenant, the Holy Grail, or some believe that the Holy Grail does not reference the actual chalice that was used during the Last Supper by Jesus, but the bloodline of Jesus, or the bloodline of the Anunnaki.
So I was thinking about it, like, I mean, it's, I believe, yeah, I mean, if I wanted to just, you know, like, humor myself and just be like, no, I totally think that it could be, like, just with the Anunnaki and whatnot, you know, information about it, or how it was done, or who was who, or anything, like, lineage-wise, like, yeah. Why wouldn't they keep that secret? Mm-hmm.
And especially at the end of that video that we were listening to about the history of the Sumerians and the Anunnaki, where it talks about them coming back and possibly to enslave the human race again. Well, if we knew that this was happening, or, you know, we're still in contact with them, of course we're not going to tell humans that, or, yeah, the human race that, you know, we're slaves. We're all slaves. We're a slave race. You know, and this is another interesting point when you talk about in that video as well, when we're talking about the slaves rebuilding the world and stuff. Well, who supposedly built, you know, the pyramids was the slaves. So sure, maybe like humans built the pyramids, but your terminology of slave is used universally there as the slaves, the human race, the slaves of the Anunnaki, that were building this great pyramids, you know, the once you rebuilt the world, you know?
Yeah. It's
Do you know if we have any information on the Aztec pyramids and stuff? As far as
yeah,
like,
actually.
What I want to know is you know, when you're talking about, like, the slaves and, was it the, supposedly, like, the Israelites or whatever that built the pyramids, the great pyramids of Giza in Egypt. So, who built the ones in Aztec, in Peru, in, you know, I was right on the tip of my tongue there. It's gone now. Yep.
Chichen Itza. It's okay.
Tichin Itza, Titicaca, that's not it.
Lol.
But yeah,
wrong,
so...
Sir, wrong, sir,
Titicaca, you know, the great period of Titicaca. Oh, man. That seems like a good place to leave this show and just... that's it. Yeah, so I think this is a good place to wrap up. As far as we're getting past the anthropomorphic side of this, and I think that we've done a good job of bringing that to light as to where these creatures possibly came from. I mean, that was the point of this episode. So, yeah.
On to the Anunnaki episode.
On to Nibiru episode. Look forward to that in the future, if there is a future, and the Anunnaki don't come back and enslave us.
Weak.
All right, so as for this episode, you know, we'll look forward to thanks for listening. Go check out our website, check out our Patreon, and unless the Anunnaki enslave us, I'm Barnaby.
And Cosmic Fathom.
And we'll see you next time, guys. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. To find out more about cryptids, anomalies, and the Paranormal Society, visit our website at wisconsincaps.com. That's Wisconsin, CAPS.com. There you can find links to our YouTube and Facebook pages. You can also submit your sightings and encounters. And don't forget to check out our online store for t-shirts, DVDs, and more. If you have had an encounter with something unexplained in or around Wisconsin, we would love to hear about it. You can send us an email at wisconsincaps@gmail.com, or to submit an anonymous report, visit our website and click Report Your Encounter on the main page.